All material in this audio story belongs to Sila J. Taesong. No part may be copied or distributed for material gain. If you share this recording with others, please reference the author and website. Thank you for listening. Glace Finds His Shadow, A Dreams of Kaimaj Short Story by Sila J. Taesong. Glace stooped in a narrow tunnel, his stomach writhing with hunger. He held aloft a glass sphere that contained an ice light. It gave off a faint blue glow, preserved by residual tejas. Like his rations, which he'd finished off the day before, it would not last forever. When it went out, he would have only his ears to warn him of danger. Even with the light, his hearing was crucial in the outer tunnels. He could hear the distant chewing of giant mole worms that zoomed through rock and would chew right through anything in its way. He could hear the faint battle cry of a far distant cave howler and the echoing rumble of a cave-in it caused. Closer, he could hear the quiet fluttering of flats beating their useless wings against the tunnel walls. For a little while longer, the light would protect him from the silent dangers. Pit vipers with fatal venom lurking in cracks and crevices. Trap fungi, their sticky mycelium fingers reaching down tunnels to grab prey. And the stealthy, viciously territorial slink. Glace slumped to the floor of the tunnel to rest and think. The ice light illuminated only a few feet of the tunnel in either direction. What he could see was no different from the rest of the labyrinth he'd been wandering. Without the steady chimes of Iskallon's water clock, it was impossible to know how long, but his rations had been packed for 10 days. His orders had been simple. Scout out 5 days, return, report findings. It was a largely useless exercise, part of his training. Most of the outer tunnels within a 30-day march had been explored. After that, the tunnels grew so narrow and unstable that scouting them was impossible. Also impossible was getting lost in the outer tunnels. All of the tunnels sloped gently upward away from Iskallon. All you had to do was walk downward, and eventually you would reach the mines and then the wide tunnels to the bridges. Glace had been scouting a narrow, spider-webbed side tunnel that sloped distinctly down when it branched into 2 tunnels leading back up. The tunnel he'd chosen forked again, both forks again heading up, and by the time he realized that all the branches in this area were taking him deeper into the outer tunnels, he could not find his way back to the original tunnel. When he finally found a tunnel sloping down, he took it, relieved, only to be directed back up when it branched. That happened over and over. He was trapped in a maze that seemed to be taking him farther and farther away from Iskallon. He'd been walking and walking, and it was getting him nowhere, so Glace continued to sit and ponder, mulling the problem over. He thought of his previous forays to the outer tunnels, considered markers he may have missed, even thought about historical accounts of the tunnels he'd read in the palace library. They all said the same thing as his experience, to get home, go down. So far, all of his attempts to go down had brought him back up. What if, from here, the way back to Iskallon lay upward? It was worth a try. Glace stood and continued up the tunnel. When it forked again, instead of taking the tunnel that went down, he took the way that went up. There was a wrongness to that, but he struggled against it. The tunnel went up and up. Glace began to doubt his decision. Every branch he encountered led upward. Not for the first time, he cursed himself for not bringing a guide. The spool of sturdy web-silk thread, anchored when he'd first entered the side tunnel, would have prevented this whole debacle. He had tried stacking stones at branches to mark where he'd been, but whenever he backtracked, his carefully placed stacks were gone, the stones at the branch a jumble that could have been anything. That was not unusual. Flats and retalians were constantly shifting the tunnel floors in their search for insects. At long last, the tunnel branched, and one passage led downward. Glace paused for a long moment at the fork. He was hungry and thirsty. He was tired, and his ice light was so dim he could not see his feet. He could continue up. The smaller passage might just lead back up again. but he did not know if he would be able to survive out here any longer. Glace took the downward tunnel. He walked down for hours. His knees began to hurt. He felt the beginnings of relief, though. Surely this was the way back home. The tunnel did not slope upward again. When it branched, all the branches led downward. After a few more hours, his ice light flickered and extinguished completely, leaving Glace in total darkness. He walked on, slower now, carefully tracing his fingers along the walls, wary of cracks that might hide a pit viper. Hunger and weariness made his steps clumsy, and he stumbled over the litter of rocks on the tunnel floor. He thought of Stasia, wondered if she would mourn him if he collapsed here and died. Would the scouts find his body before the outer tunnels ate him up? All at once, a piteous cry echoed up the tunnel, followed by a yowling snarl. Glace stopped and listened carefully. It was a slink, and it sounded in pain, perhaps wounded in a fight. The victor could be around, patrolling his territory. While his blood surged with adrenaline at the danger, Glace knew he was getting close to home and a way out of this maze. Slinks patrolled a band of the outer tunnels near the mines, and didn't venture much further up. Slinks were not all deadly creatures. In Iskallon, females and gelded males were kept as pets. The large, slender felines tamed well, and their babies were a joy to children. Glace remembered the first time he'd held a baby slink. The Stock Guild had given it to Stasia as a gift. It was softer than skin and licked his fingers with a rough little tongue. But the slinks of the outer tunnels were wild. They would be hungry and the males were fiercely territorial. Glace could fight one off with his daggers and swords, but he would not likely escape the battle without taking a wound. A wound in the outer tunnels would draw other predators, weaken him further, and could get infected. Intensely wary, Glace crept forward. He could smell the musky scent that males always gave off, but it was so strong, even at a distance, that it overpowered any subtleness that might have given him an indication of proximity. If he intruded in its territory, it might snarl or hiss to give warning. But it might also favor the advantage of surprise, and simply pounce on him. He kept his swords raised and ready. The wounded slink cried out again, this time so loud Glace was sure that he was about to step on it. He lifted a foot to set it down quietly and carefully, and found that he could not lift his other foot to follow. It was stuck to the ground. He barely had time to register that fact before his arms and legs were bound in sticky, stinging fibers. Glace had been so concerned about the slink that he had blundered right into a trap fungus. The sticky mycelium strands would hold him immobile even as they slowly digested him. He struggled, slashing at the strands with his sword, panic rising in his chest. The fungus recoiled from the sword, but a few clever strands reached along his arm and pried open his fingers with their stinging ooze. The sword fell from his grip, and he knew it was being dissolved. More strands surrounded his arms, and he was suddenly moving, being propelled toward the center of the fungus. The slink cried out again, louder, a sound of fear and pain. Glace realized what had happened. Perhaps wounded from a battle, it too had blundered into the trap fungus. He winced at the thought of the stinging pain on open wounds. He struggled wildly, prying strands off his arms, kicking at them, throwing his weight in the opposite direction, against the fungus's momentum. His breath came in shallow gasps as panic took over, and the lack of air made it harder to resist the strength of the strands. Despair gripped him. He could not escape. Even if he managed to pull free on this side of the fungus, he would still be trapped, cut off from the tunnel to Iskallon. The slink cried out again, and Glace's scalp prickled with empathy. Nothing deserved to die like this, slowly digested to death. Anger helped him quiet his panic and think clearly. The mycelium strands would keep him from trying to pull away from the center of the fungus, but what about moving toward it? Glace had seen pictures of trap fungi etched in gold plate in the palace library, and he knew that the strands grew thicker closer to a stalk, that would be rooted somewhere down the tunnel, and they would digest faster there. The stalk held the brain of the fungus, and it controlled the movement of the strands. He braced himself and pushed forward, moving with the fungus instead of struggling against it. Within seconds, he was completely wrapped in a mass of writhing strands. The stinging pain grew to agony. He could feel the motion of the slink nearby, thrashing in the web. Glace flicked his wrist, and the dagger slid down from his armband. The strands moved to grab it, then shied away from the sharp edges. In a moment, it would dissolve them and take the dagger from his hand. Glace acted quickly, slashing hard at the strands that held him. He freed himself just enough to kneel to the ground, where he found a huge, thick stalk. He sawed through it with the dagger. It was tough, and the dagger's edges were already dulled by the digestive juices of the fungus. Glace kept sawing, putting the last bit of his strength into the motion. The fungus was not smart enough to stop him. It grabbed him out of reflex, but not with purpose. By huddling over the stalk, Glace kept his hands free long enough to sever it. The strands reacted with a massive shudder and a sudden contraction toward the stalk. They continued to move, but their motions were weak and uncoordinated. They no longer had the strength to hold him. Glace was able to stand and brush off the strands that were still clinging to him. He reached down, feeling around for the slink. The first thing he felt were its teeth closing on his knuckles. He yelped and drew back his hand. "Some thanks," he muttered. He persisted, reaching behind its neck and getting a hold where it could not bite him. He picked it up and carried it in his arms like a child while it snarled and struggled. It fought him all the way to the nearest spring, dripping down over the rocky walls. It growled and snapped at his hands and kicked with its sharp hind claws while he pressed it in the water, cleaning the stinging juice off its fur, washing out its wounds. If it had been hail, the fight would have been deadly for Glace, but it was so weak and weary that its efforts were irritating rather than dangerous. By the time it was clean, it had stopped struggling, exhausted by its efforts. Glace laid it on the stony ground in the dark, listened to its breath coming in faint panting and the occasional whimper. The musky smell continued to waft up, choking Glace and making his eyes water. The creature was worse off than he'd expected. It might have been a mercy to leave it in the grip of the trap fungus. In this condition, it would not be able to hunt and fend for itself. Tired, hungry, and burning all over from the stinging juices of the fungus, Glace picked up the slink once more and continued down the tunnel, hoping it led to Iskallon. The slink's snarl was so obligatory that it faded into a whine, unable to take itself seriously. Glace saw the ice lights of the mines as a faint gray light long before he reached the first ore bins. The miners who stood sorting thick chunks of rock gave him simple, short salutes, and the normalcy of their greeting told Glace that his ordeal was over. Oft-times, Glace would linger and chat with them about his scouting, but now he wanted nothing more than a dip in the lake, a meal in the mess, and a long sleep. As he drew closer, the miners' salutes faltered into looks of surprise, and Glace glanced down at the slink in his arms, able finally to see it. It was a sorry sight, and Glace wondered if he looked just as bad. Its fur had been dissolved off by the fungus, and its skin was purple-red in the blue light. Its ears were notched and matted with blood, and claw marks, widened and deepened by the stinging juice, covered its haunches. Its big, sensitive eyes blinked and narrowed, squeezing out the light. Glace picked up his pace. The muscles in his arms were growing fatigued. He had never been so happy to see the Bridge of Prosperity looming before him, to see the city and the palace suspended from the ceiling, the ice lights glimmering, the lake still and placid. He set the slink down on the shore and took off his armor and weapons and jumped in, washing off the stinging liquid that had been trapped in his clothes. His armor was unscathed, but his woolens were thin and full of holes. When he looked at his reflection, he saw red skin and bare patches on his scalp. He washed the slink again and bound its wounds with scraps of his torn woolens. It had ceased struggling and only stared at him in shock during the treatment. He carried it across the bridge, across the city, and into the conscription barracks by the training square, where he settled it into his cot, putting his blanket over it. It was shivering when he left. He reported in and listened to a scathing lecture from Scout Kiner about bringing a guideline into the outer tunnels, followed by a commendation on how he had defeated the trap fungi. He did not tell Kiner about the slink. It was not relevant to the report, and he did not think regulations would approve pets in the barracks, so he decided to keep it quiet. The creature would be gone as soon as it was well enough. In the mess, he ate heaping plates of salted fish, pickled kabobar, and marcella salad. He wasn't sure if the slink would eat meat that wasn't fresh, but he took some salted fish back to the barracks. When he returned, the slink was sleeping deeply, no longer shivering. Blaze transferred it carefully to the stone floor under his cot, still wrapped in his blanket, and went to sleep. The hide of the cot chafed his still raw skin. Glace woke in the dim of the night to the chokingly strong smell of musk. He sat up, wide awake. The other warriors in the barracks were coming awake. The large, low-ceilinged room was alive with sleepy whispers. The lights were coming up, and everyone was looking at him. The slink was still curled up on the stone floor under the cot. The musky smell, washed away in the lake, had regenerated. "Sorry," Glace muttered to his bunkmates. "Come on, Slink." He'd have to take it back to the outer tunnels, or at least the mines. It wasn't fully healed, but it could not stay here. He picked it up, blanket and all, and it raised its head but did not stir further, just looked at him with those giant dark eyes. Glace turned and left the barracks, walked out into the dim Iskallon night. Before he was past the large, low building, the Slink was shivering again. Glace stopped, holding its quivering body in his arms. He turned and found a corner by the stoop of the barracks building and sat down, placing the slink beside him. The slink sat up on his haunches and leaned his bulk against Glace, began washing his whiskers with a sense of contentment. He put his big head in Glace's lap, just like the tamest geld slink in Iskallon. Glace sat, stroking his patchy skin gently, watching the light slowly come up on the palace above. "So that's how it is, hm?" Glace shook his head. A male slink would never last in Iskallon. He was too old to geld, too old to train. "Okay, Musk, but you'll sleep outside the barracks. And if you bite anyone, I'll kill you." The slink did not look up, but the shivers had changed to a purr that vibrated his huge body, and when Glace looked down, Musk's eyes were squeezed tight in sleep. The end. Please find more audio stories on dreamsofkaimaj.com. That's DREAMSOFQAIMAJ.com. If you like these stories, you can sign up to receive a free monthly short story delivered right to your inbox.